Yeah, I'm not trying to badmouth people that are involved in the case.
No.
But a continuing conversation, I think that's come up on some episodes that I've been a part of, and I think I've heard come up, especially after 2020, there needs to be a real accounting if we're being serious about organization. And I'm not speaking organization in a party sense, but in the in sort of the classical anarchist sense of, you know, forms of bodies for use and action that are not permanent, but like have a use and people join them and engage in them for uses. Those can be above ground, underground.
Yeah. A group of affinity that comes together to achieve a specific, like, projectual kind of goal, be it like a direct action.
We need to take a real accounting of who, depending on the severity of action, might be involved in that. And and looking at a case like this, a lot of it's not that. Despite the, so, you know, the accused shooting that the cop made, you know, whatever their case of that was, I think that there is this shows that there might be some people, and this is across the country, across the world, particularly in America, though, that people are kind of letting into some of these spaces that don't necessarily have the real shared values or shared ideas or the downness or whatever, right. And that can really bite you in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, not any of the people who were sentenced have obviously, like, held in together and, like, didn't betray each other, but, you know, I mean, the 10 of the defendants, like, very cleanly and plainly either hurt the others by confessing and, like, either giving testimony or directly testifying against their co-defendants, which I think is, I mean, I think it's abhorrent. And a lot of people, too, tried to make kind of waves of that being like, oh, they were, like, you know, being subject to, like, medical neglect in, like, prisons and, like, you know, they were being, like, intimidated in specific ways or, like, I'm sure, like, confessions were extracted under duress and stuff, but, like, what is...
Yeah, that's classic police work.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I'm kind of just like, I don't know that that's...
That's not an excuse. Like, without, flat out.
Yeah, it's not an excuse. I mean, without myself being tested and stuff, you know, it's not like I've been like, I could do that standing on my head or whatever the fuck. But it's like, you know, like... It does bear in mind, it's like, how are we constructing affinity groups for direct actions that may become very confrontational in very real senses? Or, like, are we having these kind of discussions, like, as things go beyond just, like, the kind of, like, sloganistic ones? Do we understand what the gravity of a lot of these things are when we're, like, forming these kind of, like, cadres of affinity and stuff to carry out direct actions? And you know, people talk about how, like, yeah, it was just a noise demo, and, like, maybe people who wanted to do a noise demo outside of an ICE facility didn't expect this kind of situation to occur, but
I mean, I don't know. Again, this is not demeaning. I personally, if it's not just doing a noise demo or like a little protest in front of the county courthouse after, you know, like 5 p.m. and there's no workers in there, that happens in cities across America.
Yeah,
you're going to an ICE facility.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, it's you're going to a concentration camp. I assume in kind of a rural area, even if it's near a city. Covered in feds and guys with guns who are going to point them at your head. It's different than doing a noise demo outside of an urban jail that's on a public street. I'm not saying that those can't get, you know, beat up or attacked or whatever by the police. They do sometimes, but it's qualitatively different. And I think something that I think people on this podcast have harped on, and I myself, is like, you just need to take these things, like, seriously, not in a paranoid way, but just, I hope there's a lot of good lessons learned from this in the sense of affinity, organization, and things like that. And who you talk to, the security angle too, the realities of people over relying on digital communication, Twitter, or these other things, whether it's above ground like Twitter or what people think is private, like Signal, but is clearly easily accessed, whether that's physically or through backdoors.
Yeah. It seems like the state had some of their work, the state is lazy, but had some of their work done for them in being able to access signal chats through, like, you know, seizure of people's technology and stuff, and seizure of people's devices that granted them access to, in, like, discovery, basically, of, like, organizing chats that were, you know, whether or not it was exactly where all the organizing was happening and stuff, because, like, I personally don't know whether or not that was where all the organizing was happening. The signal and stuff was used to basically build out that network and stuff, and, like, bring charges against people. And I think if... I think that is something that anarchists need to consider, is that, like, the means by which we organize are, I mean, you are taking
fundamentally notes on, different, yeah, I think, it's, than...
You're taking notes on your criminal conspiracy, to quote The Wire. Like, but like...
But it seems like even the way this gets reported on, I've seen a lot of, oh, well, people were just arrested for being at a noise demo, or this was just a noise demo and everybody's being persecuted for it, which to an extent, yes, but even the reporting, but it was obviously a little more than that, something that was going to get more complex, or could have and did. Mm-hmm. And now we have it sort of, oh no, they were just at a protest. They were just at a, doing a noise demo. Somebody just had a zine. And there's a lot of justs there that make me wonder if we're learning the right lessons from this, and if we're treating this as, some people were obviously railroaded for having a peaceful protest, mm-hmm. versus us actually confronting what probably was more likely the case, and being okay with, yes, we still support people in that situation.
Yeah, we still,
that's a great point.
We still support, yeah, people who are willing to engage militantly and, like, conflictually in very real ways, rather than finding, like, yeah, the most palatable way, which I think without diminishing the absurdity of how basically the printing operations and, like, distro, like, zine distroing and stuff is being, like, looped into a criminal conspiracy to commit terrorism and stuff. Like, that on its face is fucking absurd. I want to say that, like, for sure. But, like, that stuff, I think, yeah, no has question. Been, I think that stuff has been very defensible to a lot of are, like, milieu in a way that, like, the kind of vagary of the Prairie Land case beyond that aspect of it kind of hasn't been as defensible or, like, willing to be defended for on the face of its militancy in a way that I think didn't serve to help people feel particularly maybe protected, or, like, they had the support of a milieu behind them and stuff, which I think, you know, was a failing that probably did result in the way that people, like, were willing to collaborate more than we more than we maybe are kind of able to think of in this proximity that we are in to it.
To use a kind of funny term, a term I found funny, it seems like that there was clearly a kinetic situation that involved.
Oh my God.
There was maybe some people that went more kinetic.
Yeah. Were their boots on the ground?
Yeah. Maybe, you know, maybe. Well, yes. You know, there was definitely, and I think there was, getting back to the organizing principle, maybe people that were less kinetic or ready for a kinetic situation,
sure,
which I'm not sure I would be either at a, it seems like probably was somewhat of just a noise demo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess, do we want to get into, or is this, if it's too touchy, maybe we shouldn't. But, you know, there's a lot of chatter online I've seen about a lot of support coming from different groups. I saw, like, groups like, who knows if it's really a group, maybe it's a person now, I don't know. The Vitalist the sort of some of those milieus, you know, the stop cop city types, the cocoonish Americans. I saw a lot, you know, a lot of support and chatter from them. But then after the case, I did see a lot of critiques from those sort of milieus about the SRA types, the Socialist Rifle Association. I'm not totally familiar with all the details of the case. It seems like maybe at least some members or the people that were being arrested had been or done SRA type stuff, maybe more directly with that organization. And people pointed out that that group never really spoke publicly about this,
right,
maybe trying not to look bad. And I think if you're going to be a pro-gun sort of socialist group in that sort of way, I'm as a person and myself, even beyond anarchism as an ideology, okay with guns, growing up with guns.
Sure.
I live in a place that people shoot a lot, and I think it's quite fun. I think it's a good skill to have. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, I also think groups like SRA, I would just never even join a group that's like, yeah, we're the gun socialist group, and that's such a general term. That's kind of stupid. I think there might be, again, accounting needs to be made for also some groups like Socialist Rifle Association that may be putting people in harm's way pretty openly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of groups that have like a bid towards respectability are predicated on whether they're like, you know, broader socialist political, like as opposed to like kind of anti-political or direct action, like ones that find themselves in the space of like political process and stuff, probably are less likely to support this, what they would see as like adventurism or something, on behalf of, like, within the Marxist critique, not within my critique, but like adventurism on behalf of protesters, as opposed to their methodology. And then people whose organizing principle is largely predicated on like the respectability that comes with, you know, Second Amendment rights for all, and like a form of political plurality and stuff to discuss the ensconcing of like Second Amendment rights to like protect political expression, I think would probably, yeah, shy away from, and did very, like, as you said, like have been criticized pretty openly for shying away from like defense of, you know, their members or even publicly speaking about it for probably to preserve their like bid for, I guess, political legitimacy or like existential legitimacy that allows them to, you know, be a political organ committed to ostensibly like leftist causes, but predicated entirely on the rights guaranteed to them by the state that they're attempting to, you know, waylay.
Attempting to overthrow or something. Yeah. I mean, that's the conundrum with the SRA. I mean, there are certain, I mean, this is getting, I'm sorry, I'm putting on my, I like to shoot guns and I watch YouTube videos a lot. Yeah,
you're putting on your fez.
You know, there's groups like, you know, the Gun Owners of America that it's, I mean, the most of the people in that group are fucking conservative, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. But that's a group that has been more open in supporting cases of people, you know, who did self-defense or other stuff. But other groups like NRA didn't historically. That's a very big group now. There are groups to go to where you could be a member and you like you donate $10 a month and they'll support political causes for gun rights.
Right.
And they're it would probably include you. Even mm-hmm. groups like the Pink Pistols or whatever, right? That's not really like a politically aligned but like openly gay gun group. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of advocacy. You see them at the big, you know, gun events and stuff.
Right.
If you're going to just do that, the SRA is just a contradiction in itself, where it's wanting to be almost like an NGO pro, like a pro-gun NGO, like pro-gun charity group. But at the same time, it's like a bunch of DSA people too, even people to the left, who clearly have machinations that the state doesn't like. Yeah. That's not going to be a good, that's not functional.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a contrast, the central contrast to a lot of things that we've been discussing for the last few minutes is the kind of I would say respectability politics, but that kind of has such a bent towards specifically talking about identitarian sort of respectability. But like generally, yeah, the purchase and like the political purchase that one hopes to achieve through their activities versus the rejection of politics in their attempt to engage in like kind of militant action against the state. And I think this, like, without taking this to be the opportunity that people need or the wake-up call, because I don't think it's good to learn, or I don't think it's good to like armchair this and be like, this is the lesson we need to learn from this sort of thing. But like, I think it does kind of, like we said, call into mind a reckoning that we have to have with understanding anarchists and anarchist militants as people who are directly engaging in war with the state and as such should not and cannot expect to be guaranteed or defended or be defensible along the lines of like protected political speech if like and like I mean I don't know like the self-defense justification. I mean obviously I mean there's not a great defense in general for this, but it does not seem great that the entire predication of a defensible argument that could be made was just basically the plea for a Second Amendment right to defend one's person and stuff using guns and stuff, and that just kind of completely got thrown out, and as such, it just steamrolled the defense out of the court, basically. But like again, I understand there's not really a defensible way to, there's not really a defensible way to kind of stand up for the big charge and stuff. Like the other things could probably be fought in terms of like the political spuriousness of it, or the way that like the infrastructure was like not demonstrably, a lot of it centered on like, oh, this is like a coordinated, organized like activity of like a coordinated by Antifa or whatever. And like, I think since 2016, like people have been like kind of fighting the like Antifa does not exist and it's not an organization and stuff. And it's like, that is true. But
It's true in a fact check, guys. Fact checking the latest Trump speech.
yeah, it's a very
It's
like kind of like
context.
yeah,
Context,
a
please.
What's the matter, vague boy?
It's also just kind of going to what fucking game are we playing? Because the person who is going to the noise demo outside of an ICE facility or outside of an ICE like they have them where I'm at. Whatever. Those can be, I can see easily that somebody would have come to this as like sort of a well-meaning, I don't know, well-meaning lib going,
Sure.
we're gonna wave our signs, we're gonna do our dances and the little inflatable costumes. And if you've been in
For what
those
it's worth,
situations, you've
I
seen.
don't think that that was the crowd that was doing this sort of thing.
I'm not saying that that was the crowd. I'm not trying to like categorize that crowd at all. My
Okay.
point is more that there are a lot of fucking things going on and a lot of people interacting with this in a lot of layers, and you can easily be in the wrong layer and organizing, quote, with, sorry, one second. Okay, sorry. My neighbor's party is being busted by
Oh no.
the cops as we speak. There are a lot of layers to this shit, and there's like all sorts of people interacting with it, and I don't want to be like, you got to be careful who you like talk to, but it's worth realizing that this is kind of going to get worse.
Yeah.
So what you just said, Larkspur, brought to mind a couple things I think we've been chatting about beforehand, and also kind of some stuff I wanted to bring up. There was a really good piece by Ken Klippenstein a month or two ago. What's up?
Nothing.
But it was about bringing up my Substack articles I subscribed to. No, it was a really good piece. It was about some of the attempt at networking anarchism, right? And I think what's really interesting is, and this might play into some of my earlier points about watch who you let in, even if they don't snitch, things like this, because there is, I'm not trying to do a true Scotsman here. There are anarchists and there are not anarchists. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are people who are not anarchists who do interact with us. Sometimes a lot too many, especially around 2020 and beyond. It's been a little, sometimes it's kind of crazy. You have people you meet who say they're anarchists and you talk to them and it's like, whoa, that's, you're into rights and stuff. But there was some leaked documents from the DHS about some of these internal network stuff they're trying to build. And there was like a guy in Portland who, hey, maybe he is, at least from what I saw, probably not really an anarchist, some kind of left lib to socialist something kind of guy who was letting people who had been tear gassed come into his house to wash their face. And in these internal documents, they're like, this is the head of Antifa in Portland. That's obviously stupid and like wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an analysis you can take, be like, they're so stupid. But that's not really the point. The point is, even when they're building these networks, even false ones that don't actually really get, I think to this day, that some of the FBI documents from a few years ago that showed that they have a lot of difficulty penetrating anarchist spaces because of the ideological density and blah, blah, blah. I think some of that still really holds. A lot of the networks I think they are building are like people at protests. I'll be honest, many of those people at protests that get called Antifa, maybe some people are anarchists, a lot of them are not. And I think they are building networks and they are arresting people. There will be more arrests. There'll be more people being jailed. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily an exact map of anarchist networks, which I think is really interesting.
Right.
And that's all, that to me is maybe sometimes is a little more scary because it's more just like using sort of aesthetic ideas of anarchism, like, oh, Block. There's a lot of people these days go to rally that are in Block that are not anarchists. But a lot of them are not.
Block and so stuff they're gonna been super, like, infographicized, I would say.
Oh, yeah. So like, there's a lot of people that will be arrested. There will be, in the next few years, there's a lot of people who will be arrested. There will be more Prairie Land type events. There is going to be a lot more. And many of them, and we support them, but a lot of these people are going to be people that had the aesthetics of anarchism. Maybe they had some zines. Maybe they were arrested doing something. They maybe had some black clothing on. And that's the thing. They can make the appearance of anarchism look a lot larger because we're actually a very small force. We're very actually unorganized. We actually have very little effect in society. I think we should have more, but that's the reality. But this boogeyman of anarchism, I think we will see larger and larger raids and rounding ups of people.
Right.
And it's not a direct one-to-one, but that's very good for Palantir because Palantir can say, hey, look at our data mapping. All these other companies can see the data mapping, even if it's not accurate, because that's not the point. The point is putting people in jail for being anarchists or Antifa, really, is what they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, it's also, it's like, on one level, it's like, the state is going to charge people in terms of network formations that they can demonstrate. And if they can demonstrate it to the extent that they're able to like land charges on people for some amount of conspiracy, whether that's whether that's meaningful or not and stuff, it still creates the network and stuff on some level. And on the other hand too, it's like, is the defense that, oh, there isn't really an Antifa, I don't know that defense is like, I don't think this is all coming from like a central like vanguard or some like kind of Valus style, like fucking like beacon that's like disseminating like the, like, you know, activation, like instructions for Antifa. But like, I mean, I know that there are groups that are anti-fascist, like, action groups, and I know that those groups...
There are groups with Antifa in the name. Yeah. There are groups that's like LA, both new groups and legacy groups. And like, there are real groups with that.
Yeah, like I've participated in those groups. I've been, you know, I've been members of those groups and like know that we've made connections and had communication with other groups in other cities and shared information in that sense. And like, while they are like loose confederations and stuff, they are a network that I don't know that they've ever been like as correctly documented as like, you know, some of the stuff that you mentioned with like, this is the head of Antifa in Portland or whatever, like that just kind of like stupid, kind of like demonstration for coordinating. But like, I mean, it's not like there isn't like a very active crew of people in Portland and stuff that one might reasonably call their Antifa crew or whatever. And like, how long until some of these networks are penetrated and mapped and like able to connect people who are actually part of this? And I don't think it's not happening and stuff. Like,
oh, it's, I mean, it's happened. Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily an idealist sort of way of how it is. It's not like totally. With the AI technology, the way it's able to read social data, I mean, I really am quite skeptical of ever using Signal for kind of anything. Mm-hmm. At this point, I mean, obviously I use it mostly for chatting and sending funny pictures to my friends, mm-hmm. Which I could do on many apps, but sometimes some people, for some reason, they don't have social media, which is a good thing, but it's a good way for that. It's just the social groups are being mapped. I still think that there is a difficulty penetrating us because of the realities of the actual histories and ideologies that kind of shield that. But you don't really need that. That's kind of old style police work. You don't really need that as much when you can do social mapping through gathering data, whether that's through facial recognition, whether that's through getting into people's, like, you know, networks, whether it's even Twitter or these other, you know, apps. But and they can get these big networks. It might include people that are like more active. That's not the point. I think that it's just arresting large amounts of people, even if you get one person who might actually be like Antifa, mm-hmm. Then you can smear everybody. It's a really dark example. This is something that happened in a much more on paper way in like Argentina during the dirty wars in the late 80s.
Right.
They would go into people's houses, arrest somebody who may be actually a member of a socialist group. They would flip through their phone books. They're like, you know, their books of like the people they knew. They'd write down interesting names, go to their houses, arrest them. Some of these people they killed, some they just tortured, some they would just hold and release. They killed like 50,000 plus people this way. Obviously, many of those people were just friends or family that maybe were not active socialists.
Right.
But they still effectively terrorized the population. I think that's kind of what's being built.
Right. Like, that's kind of what I mean to say is, like, they're going to demonstrate whatever network is, like, able to create this kind of like massive conspiracy that serves the shoring up of like state power and stuff against the kind of like undesirable population of like leftists or liberals or whoever's like resisting the kind of like full ascendancy of fascism in the United States. And like, whether or not that's the authentic, you know, whether or not it's the five people you know in like Rose City Antifa, or it's like, you know, a signal loop of like a bunch of Portland, you know, protest group people that like one person from a organized anti-fascist cell or something was a member of, serves, it kind of is irrelevant. One is... Like they both can be like utilized in like building this kind of like larger network. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, maybe it needs to be recognized that the way that things are being organized now represent maybe not a perfect one-to-one of things, but like there are, like we are mapping out our own networks and stuff that are very susceptible to penetration just by brute force without even infiltration or without even like a backdoor into it. Like people, you know, suspect it's like they can just be brute force and then mapped out like slowly, but it's only a matter of time.
We wanted to talk a little about Palantir AI and that sort of technology, and I don't think we will, partly because I don't think it's fully relevant. I'm going to be a little snotty about generative AI and say that it kind of is very much, they don't need to have your social network properly mapped. It's more about, do you have something that kind of looks plausible and can be done at scale? Mm-hmm. Do you have this thing that, okay, yeah, it kind of looks like an organized Antifa cell, whatever. It doesn't matter if that's accurate or inaccurate. It's just pretext and plausibility, which is not a reason to say, oh, well, fuck it. Just let's say whatever the fuck on Facebook, Signal, whatever fucking social media you want. But it is kind of like, again, the level of game we are playing is just very, it's got very all over.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, there was like the whole idea of like the OSINT thing, and it's like the kind of security theater that like people use to kind of like ritualistically ward off like the evil eye or something of Palantir versus, I think it's like, what are the most OSINT-y kind of OPSEC-y sort of, or maybe I'm thinking OPSEC is more, no, or is, what is OSINT?
No, OSINT is like,
not OSINT, is, OPSEC, it, OPSEC.
Yeah, OPSEC, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
OPSEC, I mean, the way people talk about it hurts me. It's painful. I will say, and maybe this is a thing I've banged on about, please don't wear COVID masks to protest. They can see your eyeballs and your cheeks and stuff. I know everyone,
and that shit's
unfortunately,
gay.
Everyone, like, I mean, I don't.
No. It's cool. It's cool to do it. We keep us safe.
Mask means like a t-shirt over your face and glasses and other stuff. Still to this day, if you do cover your whole face, it is not perfect. I know there's it's still better than a damn COVID mask. They're not, you know, they're not functional for COVID, and they're not functional keeping your face off of a camera. You know, let's be real. We got to get over that. I'm kind of being facetious, but there's a lot of 2020 stuff. We got to get rid of this 2020 stuff. No one learned any of the good lessons. I'm kind of harping on the thing I harp on, but we are like stuck in like the ghost of that. And I think a lot of what Trump is doing is preventing that from happening again. He will not let that happen again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of what this like project has been through the Biden years as well, like trying to map these networks, because, you know, beyond even anarchists, you know, they might use that term for people, but it's really about mapping networks of people who potentially could say, I want to like attack a cop car, and they just want to get ahead of that. They're not going to let it happen for a bit and then go after them. I think they're trying to pre-crime this stuff. Project they've been working on for decades, but I think they really are trying to do pre-crime analysis on a really fully way.
Yeah. I'm accusing you officially of wrong think, but that's fine. But yeah, no, I agree. I think there is definitely something to be said for the kind of like haunting of the mass, the last extremely visible mass protest movement, and the lessons that people took from it versus what maybe should have been taken from it, and how that has basically just entered the cultural consciousness and like become, I mean, like in the sense that like, you know, Block is like super like kind of a given of like a mainstream protest tactic, and block is just kind of what this is what I wear to a protest, but like not really an understanding of like why this is what you would wear to a protest, or like what the purpose of wearing this to a protest was. And it's kind of been removed from its meaningfulness, and it's just become like a signifier and stuff. And I think one of the things too that we notice is like the way that like anarchists organize themselves basically around the way that people can replicate social signifiers and stuff, more so than like an understanding of like shared values of affinity and stuff in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah, I think mapping the aesthetics of anarchy, or post the influence of anarchism in America on protest in general, particularly, I mean, going back to maybe the 2000, anti-globalization, and then as that's built and influenced more and more, I think the aesthetics of anarchism, the things like zines, we go back to the zines, the gentlemanly zine printers, the title of their their draft was quite funny to me. Zines and Black Block, and like totally removed from the actual origins, analysis, the things that produce these things, the function they had, just as it exists in like the simulation of society online, that makes it very easily mapped, which defeats the purpose of all that stuff. So I have a very bleak outlook about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny with zines kind of being such a thing. It's like, not in the actual Prairie Land case, but in the kind of fallout. I mean, obviously it is in the Prairie Land case. The zines are, a big part of like what we discussed already. But like in the kind of like fallout of this, I think people have been seizing on this moment to be like, we're going to do a zine reading group. And it's like, of course, everybody's like hot for like understanding the like informants or stuff, and people are doing, I saw a reading group this week was talking about doing a zine reading group for like the Why Misogynists Make Great Informants, which as much as that is like a true thing, like, and like
it's
you know,
a truism.
It's a truism. Yeah, it's become like a truism. Like Brandon Darby being like a misogynist informant is obviously a true thing that happened, and like that, men were willing to be, disgusting, like, kind of predatory, and like use people and expend people and stuff, and like save their own skins and stuff by being informants. But like, I don't think that maps cleanly onto like the moment that we are in. And I think there's like, I think that if you evaluate someone's trustworthiness, not that I think we should be, I need to stop like qualifying all my statements and stuff, but not that we should be like being like, I'm willing to, reach across the aisle and like organize, direct actions with like a misogynist. It's like, that's not what I'm saying here. I don't think that's the lesson that we would take, but it's like, if only people who replicate are, like within our spaces without like kind of further talking deeper about what this means, if only the people who are able to sloganistically recite things that they picked up from reading the cover of zines or infographics or something, and like people are only able to reproduce the cultural signifiers that we have internalized anarchism to mean in its most like kind of mimetic and like sloganistic way, without actually like demonstrating an understanding of like the stakes and like what is like what people are up against, and like what the possibility of some of these situations may result in and stuff. I think like it's not good to meet the moment with like kind of instilling the fear of like, yeah, make sure you're not organizing with like a misogynist because they'll just be an informant, because that's not really what happened. Because I think a lot of the people that turned states witness, I don't think a lot of them were men, and I don't think they were female misogynists necessarily. And I don't think it was like a gendered thing as much as it was like, I don't think it was a gendered thing at all. I think it was just a matter of like people made deals for themselves because on some level there was not the kind of like level of like solidaristic values and stuff that kept them safe together and kept them coordinating together. And that is like fundamentally like a ideological difference sort of thing, whether it's like, you know, like a spoken ideological difference or just like a lack of understanding that was not deemed worthy of bringing up because people just reproduced these like kind of social signifiers enough to the point where no one thought to interrogate this because they didn't look like necessarily the boogeyman of the misogynist that we're all looking out for, who is going to like, you know, meet with an FBI agent in a parking lot like Big Pussy Bonapensero or something and fucking like sell us downriver and stuff. They don't look like that. They look like, you know, the other people sitting across from us at the vegan potluck who like would never do that because they're down because they're in the same collective house as me and stuff. And like, but like, you know, we've never really talked about like what happens in this sort of situation. And it turns out people aren't all operating on the same level necessarily. And like when the chips are down, people don't know how they're gonna get out of the situation without looking out for only themselves and without selling everyone else downriver and stuff. And I think that's like, I don't want people to keep, you know, learning hard lessons and then not applying the lessons learned or making the same mistakes and stuff. It's like,
I think we're just learning the wrong lessons in that case. The misogynists make great informants. Okay, sure, but so do a plenty of other people.
Yeah, like they as do. They do, but for...
Sure, and it just goes to this sort of, all right, this person... I mean, you covered it well enough, but I just wanted to step on that because we've talked about it before the podcast. It's just becomes a matter of aesthetics and signifiers. It becomes a matter of, well, you know, this person wouldn't betray us, but this person looks like they might. And, you know, like, that is not the right framework to be approaching that question on.
Right. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of... it's not like a good example, but it's like... There's like a book, I think it's called like, this is a weird example to bring up, but there's a book called like Virtual Pedophilia or whatever. And it's a study of basically like a media study of how media often creates this image of like this cultural boogeyman of like the child predator and stuff, and demonstrates like what this person looks like and like what signifiers this person has that lets people like create this like spectral evil of a person in their head, but that like doesn't map onto the nature of like how much actual, you know, abuse and harm of children and stuff is carried out, not by like people that fit that kind of like pattern of behavior and aesthetics and stuff, but it often just occurs as a result of proximity to like people in the family and stuff, as opposed to like these kind of like stranger predators lying in wait like from outside the familial structure. Like it's a misdirection and stuff that doesn't teach us to interrogate some of the ways that greater structures and values that we participate under maybe are enabling these kind of things to go on while we like hunt for kind of a, like a boogeyman that exists outside of ourselves. Even if those boogeymen are also like still predatory, they are the ones who face the scrutiny, but they're not always the ones that are the ones who are sticking the knife in our backs and stuff. It's a book that I read because of criminology and stuff, not because of any vested interest in dispelling the myth of the child predator or something. But
we it's funny. We've got, you know, it's I'm not sure when that was written, but that now is really funny just because of, you know, the Epstein files. Yeah,
we changed it from the dumpy basement dweller in cell or whatever, being the scary, like the catch a predator type pedophile, to the rich finance broker, Harvard intellectual pedophile, the Epstein class. I had to stay behind after Epstein class today.
I hate that. I fucking hate that term.
Yeah. It's pretty stupid. It's definitely a term that I feel like people, like that French guy that I keep sending you videos of, the one who's like always talking about how SpongeBob SquarePants is attempting to like destroy the family or something.
He's just like, Disney movies always begin with trauma, and it's like, yeah, that's how dramatic films work.
Man. Yeah, there's an inciting event.
The trauma of the Bambi.
The Bambi. The family is broken, and the Bambi is a pedophile. That guy's incredible. He's great. I feel like he's like on track to be the next like Prison Planet guy, sort of. Whatever happened to Prison Planet guy? Did he like hit by a bus or something? Or
he was absorbed into fucking what's his Alex Jones's body?
He got patched into one of those gangs he was afraid of.
No, Alex Jones and Frazzle Drip on him to take his adrenochrome to get like sexy again.
Frazzle Drip. Oh my god. That's scary. But yeah, no, weird aside. I mean, yeah. We should do a whole nother podcast sometime about the Epstein class. And like,
I like that Iran totally jumped on. Iran's so online. They're like they've just totally been like, oh, the Epstein class, which is really funny.
Yeah. I liked the Iranian naval carrier videos that were like set to like a slowed version of the Macarena. Those are hard as nails. I was like, damn.
Oh, I didn't see that.
I do love the Macarena on like -8 or something is like really good. But yeah, I don't know. Is there anything that we kind of want to sum up our thoughts further? I mean, obviously, you know, our sincere, like, you know, thoughts and hearts go out to the defendants who are like facing now sentencing, on what, you know, despite any of the myriad kind of like problems that we are pointing out within the way that like anarchists organize themselves and each other and stuff, still like are not anything compared to the way that the state is like sending these people like to prison based on like very colluded and conspiratorial means to like remove any semblance of like their actual like right to a fair trial and stuff.
I know the Epstein thing was an aside. Maybe it's beyond this. Maybe this is a good topic to get into. Is the state, maybe the function of building these networks, whether they're real or false or semi-real, right, for their policing, is the way they function in the conspiratorial mind world. You know, there's a real function to that. Like, we're like, hey, I think they have probably really arrested some anarchists sometimes, and that's really terrible. Mm-hmm. But then they're like, the Trump administration is like, you know who they're controlled by?
The same pedophile.
This rich liberal guy.
Yeah, the same pedophile network that controls all of us.
I think there is a real social function to that. I'll have to think more of that. But I think that's something we haven't gone into, but I think would be a good topic to revisit, is how that plugs into the sort of like general schizophrenic just shit going on generally about that. Like, I think it really plays into that.
Right. Yeah. The more networks of spurious connection you spin up, the less any actual network can be like uncovered as, like, you know, not as the secret, like, protagonist of controlling everything, but, like, as, like, part of the actual tendril of, like, organized crime that, like, has connections to government and financial power and, like, various things that, like, the state then can launder weird maneuvers through and stuff. Like, it's just the more spurious these networks are and the more spurious networks exist, it serves as a smokescreen. It's kind of like how you and I were talking about, like, how most of the AI Netanyahu videos don't actually mean that he's dead. They just mean that they want to keep people unable to, like, question, like, reality and stuff, or unable to
they want morons online to, like, but to just get deeper. They're like, let's get these fucking freaks go. Let's get them crazier. Mm-hmm. Let's get them more splintered. I really think there's a function to a lot of that, kind of beyond what we were talking about. There's a function to a lot of this. That's how can we schizoize everything more? Mm-hmm. Right. Cause when you read that Ken Klippenstein article and there's actual DHS stuff and it's like, this guy's the head of Antifa, you're like, well, that's fucking nonsense, but that's not the function. It really is a schizoizing function. I think that's the real function in society.
Yeah. It'd be funny if we actually did make that kid the head of Antifa now, like, just as a fucking joke. Just be like, yeah, you're the head of it now. Sorry. You get final approval on everything now. But yeah. All right. Well, Larkspur, do you have any final thoughts on this? How did they break up that party next door that you called the cops on?
Jeffrey Epstein was there, actually.
Oh my
God. We thought he was in Tel Aviv, but he was actually here.
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
There's a conspiracy. I got work in the morning. For you.
I want to do AI generated videos of Netanyahu smoking big doings in Amish, smoking like once in a cornfield, being like, I'm alive and I'm fine and I'm smoking big doings in Amish. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I'm not dead.
When I got my tax return yesterday, I was like, damn, I feel like BB.
damn, I feel like BB.
Jesus Christ.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone. Hang in there. And all our love goes out to the Prairie Land defendants. And definitely, like, do what you can to demonstrate support to people facing down the state, whether they are already, you know, living in the belly of, like, these institutions and stuff, or they are, like, on trial or anything like that, or just, you know, generally build networks of trust and affinity and shared values and associate on those values rather than just on the quotient of, like, who demonstrates through performance that they are anarchists or whatever, and like try and build these kind of networks of affinity that, like, will allow you to build more infrastructure for supporting people as we get deeper into the morass that I guess the state is setting up and, like, shoring up now and honing to be increasingly more vicious and narrative creating, and keep fighting consensus reality and the child eating Epstein class or whatever the fuck people are saying online these days.
But anyway, time to take the red pill.
Oh wow. Yeah, there we are. Cool.
The red and black pill.
Oh my God, yes. There we go. Alright, thanks everyone. Good night. Chinga la migra, como de migra. Chinga la migra.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Rosinante. The What's New was written by Chisel, read by Chisel and
Mona.
We hope this podcast is useful to and fun for anarchists and the anarcho-curious.
Excuse me, how much for a wet dream?